Currently, Iraq dominates U.S. foreign affairs, and many analysts believe that securing a democratic regime in Baghdad will define the success or failure of George W. Bush's presidency. Washington has pushed for a new constitution in Iraq to be officially announced on August 15, 2005. For the Iraqi people, the top list of concerns starts with electricity supply, unemployment, health care, and crime. In this case, should the Iraqi government priority be drafting a new constitution? What are the main issues at stake? Who will vote on the laws, and who will enforce them? Isam al-Khafaji answered these questions and more. He participated in the U.S. State Department workshops on the future of Iraq in 2002. Presently, he is an advisor to the Iraqi constitution writing process. Why does Iraq need a new constitution now?
Because actually, what happened after the fall of the Saddam's regime and the invasion by the United States has created a totally new situation. Actually, I wouldn't be exaggerating if I say a new country is born now or being born now. And we have, since the 1958, we haven't had any permanent constitution. It was always coup d'etats, which forced what they called interim constitutions that were never turned into permanent constitutions, and they were never put to the people for vote.
So, in effect, this is a very positive step towards democracy in Iraq.
It is. It has the potential to do that, but this is not an inevitability. I mean, Iraq is at crossroads now. Maybe this term has been used or abused thousands of times. But this is the fact that Iraq is at crossroads. It might disintegrate. It might turn into a prosperous and a democratic country. So, yes, it is a positive step, but that doesn't guarantee that things will go smoothly.
If you could explain to us who is participating in drafting the new laws.
General Assembly, or the Constituent Assembly, which was elected in January this year, was given the right to appoint a committee. Now, the committee has been formed. It is made of 71 members and non-members of the General Assembly that are drafting the law. Now, why are there non-assembly members in this committee? Because, unfortunately, in the January elections, although there was a massive response by the Iraqi people, despite the terror, despite the fears and the insecurity, more than 8.5 million people out of 15 eligible voters went to vote. But unfortunately, there are entire regions, especially the ones dominated by Sunni Muslim, whose predominant population is Sunni Muslim, either had to boycotted the elections or were threatened not to participate. And therefore, in order to create some kind of balance, many non-elected Sunnis were added to the committee.
So currently, would you say that the new laws will represent the interests and voices of all the parties in Iraq?
No, I have to be, now I have to be honest. Now I have given talked about the positive steps. Let me say something about the negative steps. The outcome of the elections has produced, not because the Iraqis are religious or etc., but because of the there were oppressed identities under the past regimes, especially under Saddam Hussein's regime, and I'm talking about the Kurds and the Shia Arabs. And these have voted massively in according to the to their this kind of identity to prove that we are there, that we count. Now, for the Shia Arab, who won 147 seats out of the General Assembly, which is made of 250, there are now the men of religion, or those with the backing by the religious factions, that are trying to impose some source of authority of Islam that many Iraqis find is too much for the Iraqi people. They cannot endure that. So to say that these are the laws written by representatives of the people, yes, theoretically they are, but actually many Iraqis have voiced their concerns and fears that actually these people are abusing the mandate that was given to them by the Iraqi people.
Now, once the Constitution is written, who will vote on the laws? I mean, does it? Are we going to require a vote so those laws would become implemented, would become accepted?
Yes. Actually, there was a mechanism put by what we call the TAL, the Transitional Administrative Law. All these procedures, the elections of the General Assembly in January, all these procedures have been stipulated by that Transitional Administrative Law, which was approved during the closing days of the American administration of Iraq. And so now the Constitution, or the draft of the Constitution, must be finished by, and handed to the General Assembly by the 15th of August. That's next week. And then by if the General Assembly approves it, it will be put to for a public referendum by December, by no later than December this year. And if all goes well, then the Transitional Administrative Law stipulates that a new General Assembly will be elected, and here we will enter the permanent, or we end the interim and transitional government era.
Professor Assam Al-Khafaji, you have mentioned that Iraq now is a new country, or a new country was born after the removal of Saddam Hussein. What are those laws for? Is it for personal relationships? Is it for international, national relationships? What do they cover?
Well, you know, the Constitution, as any constitution, it does not have to go into the each and every detail. It is the mother or the father of all laws, actually, in which all laws must conform with it. Now, this is why the Constitution is so important, because you can use the general statements put in it in order to renege on past liberties, although Iraqis have never enjoyed liberties, actually, as other people have. So this is the important. What do they cover? This structure of the state. And this is one of the basic issues, contentious issues, that are being fought now and discussed very heatedly in the press, and among politicians, and in the committee that has been formed, which I talked about. What is the structure of the state? Is it a federal state or not? Now, many, not only the Kurdish people, but others are now calling for Iraq to be a federal state, whereby the center has less powers, because we have suffered from the authority of the executive power, that is the president or the dictator, whoever he is. This is the basic, one basic issue that will be covered by the Constitution.
Sunni members of the committee drafting Iraq's new constitution have rejected the Kurdish demands for a federal state, saying it cannot be implemented under foreign military occupation and an unstable security situation. How is this debate going?
Well, I think this is a false argument, this the one that you mentioned, because at first, I mean, no one has, for example, denied the legitimacy of the elections in Palestine, in the Palestinian territory, although everybody knows that Sharon is still occupying the West Bank and Gaza. So to say that the mere presence, and I'm not a pro-occupation person, I think I'm known for being anti-occupation, but let's also not twist the facts. First, yes, we know we are under occupation, but the road to sovereignty, to gain sovereignty, is to build a stable state with its having a national army and national armed forces in order to tell the Americans thank you and leave. But now we cannot do that. Even the most patriotic Iraqi cannot claim that we can do that with all the terror that is spreading all over Iraq. The fact that there is a different nationality that is different from the Arabs, which is the Kurdish nation, that has a different language, that has been living in this territory, in its on its land for thousands of years, is a fact of geography and history. And even a tyrant like Saddam Hussein has had to recognize this fact by promulgating what was so-called the autonomous, the rule of the law of autonomy for the Kurdish region. So now I think the clock cannot be turned backwards. And now that Iraq is entering in what all Iraqis hope will be an era of freedom and democracy. I think that no serious person will dispute the fact that Kurdistan must have a special status. What will we call that status, federalism or not, that's not the issue. But the rights of this people, this nation, to have its elected bodies, to have its autonomy, and now these are the issues that are being debated. One more very important thing that is being disputed on the issue of federalism is whether the natural resources, because, you know, much of, not all and not most, but much of Iraq's oil is in Iraqi Kurdistan. So one of the very contentious issues that is being debated now is, will the natural resources be under the authority of the central federal government, that is the government of Iraq, or will the regions have their say on the distribution of these wealth, etc.? So these are the issues that are being debated. A third issue about federalism is that now there are voices, mounting voices actually, in the south, which are calling also for the creation of a federal region there, under the, with the acceptance, naturally. No Iraqi is now talking about the disintegration of Iraq. Everybody talks about that this is a step towards strengthening Iraqi unity rather than the disintegration of the Iraqi state.
So if we can come to an agreement about wealth sharing, you think that this is a positive step?
This will be a very positive step. Maybe this will be a decisive step. But remember, these are not all the issues. The disputes are not only about that. As I was saying, there is another issue, which is the role of Islam in the Iraqi legislation. Is it the source of legislation, or is it one of the sources, a source of legislation? Now, this might look, for the audience, this might look a trivial issue, but it makes a world of difference if you put it that it is the source of legislation. One of the most courageous movements in protest against that is coming now from the women movement in Iraq, which is waging demonstrations, protests, etc., because once you say Islam is the source of legislation, then you open the door into to the subjugation of women. Women in Iraq have always played a prominent role. We are calling now for, we have a positive thing now that is being implemented now, and I was honored to be an advisor to the formation of the first to the United Nations envoy who formed the first Iraqi post occupation government, and I'm proud that we managed to put 25% of all the seats in the General Assembly and in the government in the hands of women. I think no other Middle Eastern country has achieved that. We have now 6 women ministers. We have 25% of the members of the General Assembly that are women, and we do not want to go back backwards. Iraq is the first Arab country that has a woman minister back into 1958. So if you put Islam as the role, or the main source of legislation, then this opens the door into subjecting women into the dominance of men in Iraq. And this is one of the issues that we do not want. So this is also a very important issue that is being debated now.
What about international relationships? Would the Constitution cover also what laws are going to govern the relationships between Iraq and the neighboring countries?
Yes, I mean, it will not put that into specifically. I mean, it will not put an article talking about, for example, Iraq-Iranian relationship. But it does, because of the tragic history, especially since 1980, when Saddam Hussein waged in two decades, waged two wars against two of its neighbors, Iran in 1980 and Kuwait in 1991, and occupied the whole of Kuwait. Now we have to live in peace with ourselves and with our neighbors. So yes, I mean, one of the this is an issue that has been settled. Fortunately, there are no disputes that the president will not have the power to declare war, etc. That the president will be a symbolic figure. That the General Assembly will have the ultimate right, the parliament, that is, will have the ultimate decision on issues of war and peace and neighboring and relations with the neighboring countries. There is now, I think, an agreement between all, or at least the vast majority, that we have to put this behind our back, the role of the armed forces, that it will not go outside the borders. There are now calls for that. I am one of those who are pushing for that, that it will not go beyond the Iraqi borders unless it's for under, for example, the United Nations or for humanitarian services. So, yes, these are the basic general principles that will be put in the Constitution. The treaties between Iraq and the other countries, whether neighboring or not, will not be in the hands of the president or the executive, but the parliament must approve of them. These, I think, are good breaks on the tyranny or the potential for a tyrannical president or prime minister.
How about the relations between Iraq and the United States? Is this presently discussed in the Constitution? Is there any reference to it?
No. No, and I think this is a healthy sign that we should not single out any single country in the Constitution. This will be if this were to be put in the Constitution, then that means that all Iraqis will be obligated to follow that. No, we want to treat the United States, despite the present situation, despite the present occupation, and we want to end up, hopefully as soon as possible, with a friendly relationship with the entire world, including the United States. We do not want to single out the United States as a special protector or colonial power for Iraq. And I don't think that any wise politician would dare call for a special article or statement in the Constitution regarding the relationship with the United States.
Now, the problem in the Arab countries, Professor Assam El-Khafaji, is that it's not the lack of laws. The laws are there, the laws seem to be democratic, but it's how the laws are applied. So who is going to enforce the new constitution?
You are very right. I mean, this is something that, although I wouldn't say that the laws in most Arab countries are democratic, but I do agree with you that the problem is not only in the laws, but in the implication. Look, there is no other way but empowering the people. It's only when the people have the power to pose their through elections, through punishing those politicians who will betray their promises. This is the only thing. Now, I'm not, and I don't think any Iraqi has the illusion that once good laws are passed, then Iraq will become Switzerland. No, this is a long, long process. Now, we know that from history in Canada and the United States and England, the mere fact that there was a constitution or a Magna Carta in England did not turn these countries automatically into the democracies that we see now. There were hundreds of years of struggles and tens of years of struggles by women, by blacks, by others to be empowered. That led to the democratic outcome that we know today in the democratic countries. But to say that the problem is not in the laws does not mean that laws are not important in, by themselves. How can you take a government, a president, a prime minister accountable and put him into, for example, into trial or impeach him or her if you don't have the laws that give the people the right to do that? So yes, you're right. On the one hand, laws are not enough. But I think that if other conditions are met, Iraq has entered into an era where people are beginning to talk, where people are beginning to assemble, where people are beginning to demonstrate, etc. And despite all the black picture that you and many others and all of us see about the terrorism that is spreading in Iraq, the fear, the insecurity, I don't think there's any other country in the Middle East or in Iraq where people are managing to go into the streets and to criticizing their politicians, into whether they are the president, the prime minister. These are positive things that have opened up since the fall of Saddam Hussein.
Now, talking about Saddam Hussein, what about his legacy, his debts towards the other countries, in particular the debts after the Gulf War to Kuwait? Debts first and reparations, war reparations. And this represents a huge amount of the new Iraqi economy. Has this been addressed in the new constitution, like Iraq is going to be responsible for those debts and the Iraqi people didn't vote for the invasion of Kuwait, they didn't vote for what Saddam Hussein did with their countries and with their wealth?
This is a very, very important issue that you are raising now, but once again, this will not be put into the constitution. Remember, once again, the constitution is the father of all laws. It does not have to deal with each and every issue that Iraq is facing, and we have thousands of problems through what you call and you are right, in the legacy of Saddam Hussein. Now, this is a problem that have been the two governments of Iraq since the fall of Saddam Hussein, the two Iraqi prime ministers have been addressing very, very heavily. Many visits to Iran, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia were aimed at that. We have to work on that in a wise and way in order to. Unfortunately, I mean, while many foreign countries, France, Germany, the United States, etc., have agreed under the auspices of the World Bank to drop their debts to Iraq, unfortunately, the brethren Arabs have not. And I will say my personal view. I feel that many countries are using these legacies, although they know what you have said is very right, that we did not vote for the invasion of Iran, we did not vote for the invasion, actually we did not vote for the coming of this Ba'ath Party, which was led by Saddam Hussein to power in the first place. But unfortunately, many countries are trying to use that as a Damocles sword, as a way to blackmail Iraq, to force concessions on Iraq. While I feel, and many Iraqis feel, that the road to stability in the region, not only in Iraq, is to open a new era in the history of this region of friendship between Iraq and all of its neighbors, irrespective of the nature of their political regimes. Unfortunately, Iran is still calling for reparations that might reach $200 billion, that is $200,000 million from Iraq. Kuwait is calling for something like $80 billion, Saudi Arabia and the same. And I think this will create a kind of a revanchist generation in Iraq if these demands will be pushed on the Iraq, which is suffering from so many tragedies where the living standards have dropped so much. So I think it's in the interest of our neighbors, not only of Iraq, to open anew, to show that we are extending our hands to help our Iraqi brethren who have suffered enough, more than enough, under that brutal regime of Saddam Hussein.
Professor Issam Al-Khafaji, as an Iraqi, do you feel optimistic? Are you excited about the new constitution? In just 1 minute, please.
No. I will be very frank with you. In the short run, I'm not optimistic. But I do feel that in the medium run, and I don't know what the short run is and the medium run, so don't ask me how many years are you talking about. Actually, I feel that in the short run, Iraq is facing a huge legacy. And up till now, I'm sad to say that the Iraqi government has not dealt with these issues. Iraqis see corruption everywhere. So they have lost trust in the process itself. Many Iraqis are saying, "Is this the reward that we have that we are being rewarded after challenging terror and going to elect an Iraqi parliament?" They don't see real glimpses of light. But in the medium run, that is, let's say, in 5 years or so, I feel that yes, Iraq will be embarking on a new path.
Thank you very much. We were talking to Professor Issam Al-Khafaji. He is currently an advisor to the Iraqi Constitution writing process.